Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as we continue to appeal, we want to make sure and encourage all who are inclined to appeal to heaven, please continue to learn, pray, and act. We are also focused on working and getting everybody to unite on full compliance to the Constitution. I can't say that enough. That's what it is all about. It's all about accountability. They take an oath. They can only do those things enumerated. We do not have kings, queens, and princes, and dukes, and all these things that we would find in a monarchy or any other form of government. We have a very limited and defined government at every level. So we have to hold them accountable. It's all about that. And in addition, the last obligatory, I am more than happy to run as president in 2028, but I'm not going to do an unconstitutional campaign. I need to work with the Electoral College because that's why the Electoral College existed. The people were to choose who their electors were going to be, not their president. So what we want to do is we want to convince enough people in this republic to actually run and challenge the state party and the state secretary of state to allow the party to basically steal your electors. If you're looking for the academic proof on all of this, it's in Why Counties Matter Most. It was clearly delineated that we, the people, were to choose our electors, who would then, in turn, choose the president. Anybody that is clinging to the idea of a popular vote, that the people choose the president directly, is not in support of the Constitution. And so all these people that, oh, I love the Electoral College, but no, we want the party to control that, then they don't know what the Electoral College really is. So this is why I say we have a party form of government and not a Republican form of government, because your representatives, your electors would choose. And if they can't choose, guess who it then goes to? It doesn't go back to we the people. It then goes to Congress, to the House of Representatives. Again, one of your representatives will choose the president. Either it's your elector or your congressman. That's how it works, folks. That's how the Constitution was designed. They didn't fathom technology today and the ability for a president or one person to be able to travel to every city, town, climate, you know, on a campaign to say, vote for me. Even today, you can't. And many people complain. I went down a rat hole, didn't I, Tammy? Welcome back, Tammy.
That's all right.
Many people today claim and they complain that their state is, you know, nobody campaigns. Trump doesn't come here. Nobody comes here because it's already decided. The party has laid it out already. You want to get rid of this crap? We have to actually take our government back. It's a self-governing system, and we're inviting you to be a part of that. So we're in the Massachusetts debates, and we are still with Colonel Varnum. And as a matter of fact, I take that back. It wasn't Colonel Varnum. I think that was Mr. Pierce that did the jurisdiction. Colonel Varnum is going to do the... Hold on here. Yeah, we didn't read this. Okay, so this... Okay. Yeah, okay. So Colonel Varnum, I was thinking, we need to read this. So actually, folks, from here, we're going to be reading a few different responses regarding jurisdiction and delegated powers. So go ahead and pick it up with Colonel Varnum. Go ahead.
Okay. In answer to an inquiry, why a Bill of Rights was not annexed to this Constitution, said that by the Constitution of Massachusetts, the legislature have a right to make all laws not repugnant to the Constitution. Now, said he, if there is such a clause in the Constitution under consideration, then there would be a necessity for a Bill of Rights. In the section under debate, Congress have an express power to levy taxes, etc., and to pass laws to carry their requisitions into execution. This, he said, was expressed and required no Bill of Rights. After stating the difference between delegated power and the grant of all power, except in certain cases, the colonel proceeded to controvert the idea that this constitution went to a consolidation of the Union. He said it was only a consolidation of strength, and that it was apparent Congress had no right to alter the internal relations of a state. Design in amending the Confederation, he said, was to remedy its defects. It was the interest of the whole to confederate against a foreign enemy, and each was bound to exert its utmost ability to oppose that enemy. But it had been done at our expense in a great measure, and there was no way to provide for a remedy, because Congress had not the power to call forth the resources of every state, nor to coerce delinquent states.
Okay, if you stop right there, because that's really red and highlighted. He's talking about how the Articles of Confederation confederated to basically join together to fight. And so the problem was that they couldn't fund the fighting because they didn't include the direct taxation or the ability to actually coerce taxation. So even though they got people to go fight and people started taking money out of their pocket to fund the war, many of the states weren't paying their due bill because the Articles of Confederation didn't have the ability, or the, I should say, Continental Congress didn't have the ability to force the states to pay. You know, so you would think that maybe, okay, if you want to fight the war, then you got to pay or you're out. See, this was the problem. The Articles of Confederation were so defective because, bottom line, if you're going to give somebody the power to do something, you have to fund that too, right? If I'm going to put somebody, if I want to have somebody go look at a potential investment of mine and I hire them, you know, or have get a contract to have some, let's say, property inspector, I hire you, I put you on a plane and you go out there to, you know, look at the property and so forth, and you come back and go, okay, here's the cost of my trip. Well, you expect me to pay for that? That's what happened. Because the states, even though the states said, okay, Continental Congress, we're forming you to go fight this war. They go fight the war and they say, okay, give us soldiers. But when it comes down to paying, well, that's a whole different story. Well, you know, we're not. And so when Congress actually started really trying to be coercive, what the states did was they inflated their currency so that they only paid a partial of the debt in reality. See, the states were the problem. And so the Confederation didn't really change. The only thing that changed, well, there were some new roles, but technically not. When you look at the Articles of Confederation, it had the responsibility of being able to keep the treaties of trade. It had the responsibility of, you know, basically funding the needs of the general government or Continental Congress. And the states needed to pay for that. And they just were flat out not paying. They were just, why? You know, what do we need you for anymore? We just won the war. Why do we need that? And they didn't realize that because they weren't paying, the Continental Congress had to go and get foreign debt. And what'll end up happening, as they knew, the foreign debtors were going to start knocking on their door going, hey, you know, you owe us money, right? Because they have all the coercive power necessary to come and actually extract their pound of flesh, if you know what I mean. So what he's saying here is that the design in amending the Confederation, he said, was a way to remedy the defects. It's not that they got away from the Confederation. They only gave it the rest of what it needed for it to do that limited job of providing security, because most people think that we are a federation, because we use this thing called the federal government. Folks, go look up the definition. Go ahead, Tammy, while I'm talking. Look up the difference between a federation government and a confederation government. And when you look at the confederation government, the definition is clearly dictated that it is a limited and defined general government, a confederation that basically serves in very limited capacity. A federation is where the general government has full capacity to do whatever they need. Are you looking that up?
I am.
And am I right? Go ahead, read the definition of a confederation.
This one says, federation is a political system where power is shared between a central national government and individual states or provinces.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It says examples, United States, Germany, Australia. And then a confederation is a union of sovereign states that come together for specific purposes like defense or trade, usually through a weak central authority.
A federation?
Okay. Confederation.
Okay, a confederation, right. A federation is one that the general authority or the national government or the federation itself has most all the power, right? Am I not getting that right?
Well, yeah, this one defines it. So federation is a political system where power is shared between a central national government and individual states or provinces. That's what it says.
So if you dive into that, a federation, basically, it creates it's a national government where the assumed idea behind this, and I'm just going to Wikipedia right here. So let me do this. A federation is also called a federal state, is an entity characterized a union of partially self-governing, partially. In other words, they have their own perfunctuary, but in a federation, the self-governing status of the component states, as well as the division power between them and the central government, is constitutionally entrenched. And so they're playing with this. But bottom line, when you really look at a federation, the assumption is that the states are administrative, that the states have their own partial control. And when you looked at the federal government at these points in time, under the understanding of what government did in those days, everybody felt that they were creating a federal government because national security was all, you know, security, that was it, and commerce. But as the 10th Amendment asserts, all powers not delegated are left to the state. So can the federal government start regulating labor? Can they start regulating energy? Can they start regulating housing? Can they start regulating education? And so forth and so on. If they're not delegated, no. And the concept, Madison really got into this, and he basically laid it out that when you look at the federal government by design was external, outward facing. In other words, its focus was on national security and protecting the security of the union as well as individual states. They weren't to get into the knickers. They couldn't tell the states what they could produce, what they couldn't produce. But they did control foreign trade coming into the union because they had the responsibility over foreign affairs, which means that the president had that role in the Constitution, which means that if there was an unfriendly nation out there, that they could actually make it so that we couldn't do trade with them. And at that point in time, the one unfriendly nation that there were a couple, Ottoman Empire was one, but another one was Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did limit, and they actually were playing economic warfare with Britain. But the states, after the Revolutionary War, many of the states went back and started trying to, you know, do more business because Britain could deliver the goods. They had this monopoly on the flow of commerce for the most part. They were the world empire. And so if you look at how government has consumed and more responsibilities, those responsibilities should have been consumed at the state if the people wanted that. Education, housing, labor, even the commerce, what you're doing, businesses, those types of things. And, help me out here. social services, health, welfare, all those types of things, that was left to the states. The states did all of that. But when the federal government says, we'll do this for you.
Yeah, we'll give you just a little bit of money and then we'll help you out.
But as you understand, a confederation, they only have what is delegated to them. A federation is where they have general powers where they can assume, you know, most anything and everything. That's the real big difference that most people, that the language and the difference between these two, they don't really go down that path. Because
the search says that the United States is a federation. So it's correct.
That's right. Because they have made those types of claims. And they have basically said anything and everything under the sun, if we think it's necessary and proper, we will take and seize control of it. There's nothing that stops them other than the fact that the Constitution, as it was just, this is why we're going through this. This is why these words in the ratification debates are so important, because they're clearly saying that they can only do these things delegated. This is why we go through the cod fishery bounties, and I show you how Madison says if you can use the public purse to fund all of these different things under the auspices of welfare, then what's going to keep Congress from taking control of the churches, taking control of the education, taking control of everything that requires money? And they all go, oh, no, that's not for us to do. Well, maybe they had the morals and the compunction at that point in time. But the reality was they didn't have the enumerated or the delegated power to do those things. And Madison was arguing that these bounties on the cod fisheries was not an enumerated bounty. We're not supposed to be paying these things. So anyway. All right. So let's keep going with the rest of his verbiage.
Okay. But under the proposed government, those states which will not comply with equal requisitions will be coerced. And this, he said, is a glorious provision. In the late war, said the colonel, the states of New Hampshire and Massachusetts, for 2 or 3 years, had in the field half the Continental Army under General Washington. Who paid those troops? The states which raised them were called on to pay them. How, unless Congress have a power to levy taxes, can they make the states pay their proportion? In order that this and some other states may not again be obliged to pay 8 or 10 times their proportion of the public exigencies, he said, this power is highly necessary to be delegated to the federal head. He showed the necessity of Congress being enabled to prepare against the attacks of a foreign enemy, and he called upon the gentleman from Andover, Mr. Sims, or any other gentleman, to produce an instance where any government consisting of 3 branches, elected by the people and having checks on each other, as this has, abused the power delegated to them.
Okay. So, as we move forward, it's all based on the delegated powers. Duh! Which is what I've been saying. And that's why we're going to go through this. Folks, this is a broken record. Throughout all of the ratification debates, the Federalists kept saying, they can only do these things delegated. They bring up an issue. Oh, they're going to control the press. They're going to control our religion. That's not delegated. We don't need a Bill of Rights. Oh, we got to have a Bill of Rights because they're going to do that. Well, it's not delegated. Why are you even bringing up the fact that they're going to start regulating religion or all of these things when it is not delegated? They have no power to do it. And this gets, as we go through this, as a matter of fact, the Virginia debates are probably one of the most entertaining, because I can tell you how many times I've seen the Federalists come right back after, you know, they refute something and they want to move forward, because the Virginia ratification debates were agreed that they were going to go through the Constitution line by line and sequentially deal with everything as it comes along. And they immediately, the anti-federalists started, you know, grabbing on to certain things like the Bill of Rights and some things up front, and they didn't allow the flow to go the way they wanted it. In other words, the Federalists kept on getting up, why are we revisiting this? We've already told you. It's just like they didn't want to move forward. They moved forward. Yeah, but what about this thing back here? We got to have a Bill of Rights. Anyway, so Mr. Choate, I almost want to say Mr. Chocolate, but Mr. Choate then pipes in and says, go ahead.
Mr. Choate said that this clause gives power to Congress to levy duties, excises, imposts, etc., considering the trust delegated to Congress that they are to provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, etc. This is to the object of their delegation. The next question is whether they shall not be vested with powers to prosecute it. And this can be no other than an unlimited power of taxation if that defense requires it. Mr. Choate? Is that who's? I forget. Mr. C, that's what they put in here. Mr. C contended that it was the power of the people concentrated to a point that is all power is lodged in them, this power ought to be supreme. He showed the necessity of its being so, not only for our common defense, but for our advantage in settling commercial treaties. Do we wish to make a treaty with any nation of Europe? We are told we have no stability as a nation. As Congress must provide for the common defense, shall they, asked Mr. C, be confined for the imposts and excise? They are alone in the judges whether 5% or 1% is necessary or convenient. It has been the practice of all nations to anticipate their resources by loans. This will be the case of the United States in war. And he asked, if our resources are competent and well established, and that no doubt remained of them, whether in that case the individuals who have property will not cheerfully offer it for the general defense. After adverting to the idea of some of its being a consolidation of the Union, Mr. Choate concluded by a brief display of the several checks contained in securities for the people to be found in this system.
Okay, so he continues to kind of emphasize the same thing, that bottom line, the government, if they have to go to war, they're going to either have to get a loan from somebody or they're going, you know, and preferably internally. But if they have to, then they'll have to go to a foreign country. And that's what ended up happening with 1812, because we were attacked. You know, we didn't decide to go to war. War was brought to our shore, and D.C. was burnt down by the British. So I think that when we look at, you know, what he's talking about here, it's absolutely, you know, clear that they can only do these things. Now, General Thompson, now this is the reason this has AF there is he's an anti-federalist, and this is an anti-federalist sentiment regarding this. So go ahead.
All right. Sir, the question is whether Congress shall have power. Some say that if this section was left out, the whole would fall to the ground. I think so too, as it is all of a piece. We are now fixing a national consolidation. This section, I look upon it, is big with mischiefs. Congress will have power to keep standing armies. The great Mr. Pitt says standing armies are dangerous. Keep your militia in order. We don't want standing armies. A gentleman said we are a rich state. I say so too. Then why shall we not wait 5 or 6 months and see what our sister states do? We are able to stand our ground against a foreign power. They cannot starve us out. They cannot bring their ships on the land. We are a nation of healthy and strong men. Our land is fertile, and we are increasing in numbers. It is said we owe money. It is said we owe money. No matter if we do, our safety lies in not paying it. Pay only the interest. Don't let us go too fast. Shall not Massachusetts be a mediator? It is my wish she may be one of the 4 dissenting states. Then we shall be on our old ground and shall not act unconstitutionally. Some people cry, it will be a great charge, but it will be the greater charge, and be more dangerous to make a new one. Let us amend the old Confederation. Why not give Congress power only to regulate trade? Some say that those we owe will fall upon us, but it is no such thing.
Yeah, so if you can't tell, what we have is we have a break coming. So we can pick it up right there where you left off. And so apologize. Anyway, Folks, we'll be right back after this quick promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so what you had just read was, why not? Actually, I'll go a little bit ahead of that. Some people cry, it will be great change, but it will be greater change and more dangerous to make a new one. Let us amend the old Confederation. Why not give Congress the power to regulate trade? And so what he's doing is he's going through the few things, but in all honesty, when you look at those things that were delegated in the Articles of Confederation, the Continental Congress did not have, because the big change is direct tax. Congress can now actually, and Congress controls the foreign trade. They control the treaties with foreign countries. When he says regulate the trade, he's making the assumption that Congress is regulating all trade. And the Continental Congress didn't control all trade. And the United States Constitution didn't control all trade. It only controlled foreign trade that was coming in. And it had the ability to control trade going to countries that should not receive trade. In other words, when it came to our interfacing with foreign nations, Congress and the federal government, I should say actually the president, would maintain those lanes in the road. The states could not control them anymore. They were pulling it away from the states. And so I don't understand what General Thompson, because he obviously isn't looking, because he's seeing other things that actually aren't there. Or I should say he's suggesting that this new system is much greater. When you look at the fact that there's a judiciary, a separate judiciary that's a part of this, well, that's a part of the Articles of Confederation. But it was a huge problem that they had, because Continental Congress had problems even getting the jurisdiction and even getting courts assembled, because it was at the will and the whim of the states and the people that were doing the state business. In other words, Continental Congress was that stepchild that everybody abused. I guess that's a good metaphor. Bottom line, so he's basically making these ideas or laying these ideas out that what they're doing is absolutely, but when you look at what they're doing is a problem, and these are going to be dangerous. But in all honesty, when you go through the amendments that were basically provided, and no state was going to allow that to happen, they said, okay, we need to actually do this, because what was going to happen if they were going to propose amendments, it was going to die. So what was the one problem that they had to change in the Constitution to get this taxation and to fix the Articles of Confederation? What's the one thing that they absolutely had to get rid of? And if you don't know, it's the unanimity. In other words, the requirement that every state had to agree. That right there was the death nail in the Union. Because there was always Rhode Island. And so if you said, okay, all but one state, that's still a problem. So what they did was they said, we're lowering the bar to 3/4 because we know Rhode Island won't play along. And we could have gotten almost all of our amendments done, but Rhode Island just won't play. So we're, in other words, it was almost a way of saying we're leaving Rhode Island behind. We don't. They left the Constitutional Convention. They showed up and they said, we're not playing. We're leaving. And they packed up and left. I don't even know if they even sent anybody. I think there was one state that sent some delegates and they went back. And so I think there were two states that really weren't present. And you know what? The best way to do that is to actually look at the Constitution and its signature, right? So when I look at the signature side, we had New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York only had Alexander Hamilton, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Okay, so there were 12 states that actually were present. It was only Rhode Island that was not there. So really, what the Constitution, what they had to do was they had to say, we have to abandon Rhode Island. They're holding us back. Because of their unwillingness and their lack of reasoning and being able to be reasonable, the fact is we got to get rid of them. They're not in this union. If they want to be in this union, then fine. That's up to them. Rhode Island knew once the Constitution formed and they had to buy into this, they knew that their games and their ability to hold the Confederation hostage were over. Those days are gone. This little teeny, look at Rhode Island, it's the smallest state in the Union. I don't know if, I'd like to see it in comparison to Singapore, because I think Singapore might be bigger than Rhode Island. And so this little teeny speck actually controlled the success. And as a matter of fact, I think the Lord works in mysterious ways. And I think that he literally possessed Rhode Island with this unreasonable tenor that, you know, they were just not going to play, which forced the states to go down this path of really revamping the system so that it could work. And it did require a revamping. And in the process of doing that, they really created a well-defined government with these checks and balances between the magistrate. By dividing the magistrate into three separate branches, that provided checks and balances within that one awesome, powerful part of government. Anyway, didn't mean to go down this rat hole, but the bottom line is what he's saying, what Mr. Thompson is saying, is really irrelevant, because he's not really looking at the Constitution and comparing it to the Articles of Confederation. He's looking at something that looks different. Well, it still has the same language. It is a huge improvement. So anyway, he goes down this path of saying those things. So I'll let you take it from there. Some say that those are...
Okay. Some say that those we owe will fall upon us, but it is no such thing. The balance of power in the old countries will not permit it. The other nations will protect us. Besides, we are a brave and happy people. Let us be cautious how we divide the states. By uniting, we stand. By dividing, we fall. We are in our childhood yet. Don't let us grow too fast, lest we grow out of shape. I have proved that we are a respectable people in possession of liberty, property, and virtue, and none in a better situation to defend themselves. Why all this racket? Gentlemen say we are undone if we cannot stop up the Thames. But, Mr. President, nations will mind their own interest and not ours. Great Britain has found out the secret to pick the subjects' pockets without their knowing of it. That is the very thing Congress is after. Gentlemen say this section is as clear as the sun, and that all power is retained which is not given. But where is the Bill of Rights which shall check the power of this Congress, which shall say, Thus far shall ye come, and no farther. The safety of the people depend on a Bill of Rights. If we build on a sandy foundation, is it likely we shall stand? I apply to the feelings of the convention. There are some parts of this Constitution which I cannot digest, and sir, shall we swallow a large bone for the sake of a little meat? Some say swallow the whole now and pick out the bone afterwards, but I say let us pick off the meat and throw the bone away.
Okay, so obviously he's using a lot of hyperbole, and he's coming back to, we have to have a Bill of Rights. It was already laid out that it's a fool's errand. I mean, they already laid it out here in Massachusetts. Pennsylvania, we saw it already, but they had already laid out that nobody can create a definitive list. So why even worry about trying to create a list to say you can do everything except these things? That's even worse. To say, okay, you have full power over us, but you can't do these things. The idea that that's a better government than a special, limited, and defined power of attorney, like the Constitution is, because Britain has a general power of attorney with a Bill of Rights. But yet, they'd rather have a general power of attorney with a Bill of Rights, where he basically was calling for the same system where Congress can pick into their pockets. The only way Congress can pick into their pockets is if the states allow it. Because the states only have to hold the federal government accountable to say, sorry, you can't tax us for those things you're doing. As the king was taxing America for funding their wars around the world. So we said if you're going to tax us, we have a right to be represented in Parliament. No taxation without representation. That was the real thing here. And that came down to, you know what? They're not going to give us representation, so we're bolting. We're leaving. And they created a much better system than what Britain had. Much better. Anyway, it's a perfect system. I go as far, I mean, many framers said it wasn't perfect. It was perfect, considering all the compromises, what they needed to do, absolutely, it was perfect. We got rid of some stuff, like slavery and so forth. But at that point in time, obviously, the Union, or the states, were unwilling, because we already talked about this several times, was unwilling to give up slavery. Okay, well, it was my opinion to just say, go be on your own. You'll be back, or you'll be taken in under a part of Britain. Because that's what's going to happen. If you're on your own, then they're going to come and they're going to mess with you. But we will defend, because we have the ability to defend ourselves. You won't have the ability, because that came up when we read the Constitutional Convention. It was brought up several times that the Southern states needed the North more than the North needed them. But they had this premise that we needed to maintain the Union, and they made a false supposition that the Union needed to be intact. I think that they would have been far better to say, you're on your own. You want to come in, you've got to get rid of slavery. And you can fight your own war. Florida's to the south of you, and Britain's going to hear that you're on your own, so let us know how that goes. Because either Britain will come and they'll play the games like they did with us in, arming your slaves and getting insurrections and those types of things, because that's what they'll do. So either one way or the other, you're going to be subjugated and punished for breaking away, or you're going to have to give up slavery. There you go.
Makes sense.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Finish up this last paragraph.
Okay. This section, sir, takes the purse strings from the people. England has been quoted for their fidelity, but did their constitution ever give such a power as is contained in this constitution? Did they ever allow Parliament to vote an army but for 1 year? But here we are giving Congress power to vote an army for 2 years, to tax us without limitation, no one to gainsay them, and no inquiry yearly, as in Britain. Therefore, if this constitution is got down, We shall alter the system entirely and have no checks upon Congress.
Okay. So now we can stroll down a little bit farther, and we find the Honorable Mr. Bowdoin speaking about taxation and the failing of the Confederation. Now, remember, this is a response to Mr. Thompson, General Thompson. Now, actually, there was one person that spoke. Let me read this. Mr. Niles wished the honorable gentleman would point out the limits to be prescribed to the powers given in this section. And so the Honorable Mr. Bowdoin stands up and he starts going through this. Basically, what he's saying here is refuting what the Honorable Mr. Thompson, or the General Thompson, was saying. Go ahead.
In considering it, every gentleman will reflect how inadequate to the purposes of the Union and the Confederation has been. When the plan of the Confederation was formed, the enemy were invading us, and this inspired the several states with such a spirit of union and mutual defense that a mere requisition or recommendation of Congress was sufficient to procure the needful aids without any power of coercion. And for that reason, among others, no such power was given by the Confederation. But since that reason bad seas, the idea of danger being removed by the peace, the requisitions of Congress have in most of the states been little regarded, notwithstanding they solemnly pledge their faith to comply with them. This noncompliance has compelled Congress to increase the foreign debt of the Union by procuring further loans to pay the interest and installments due on former loans, and in that way to preserve the public faith, which had been pledged to foreign powers. It has compelled them, in order to prevent the consequences of a breach of faith, as relative to those powers, to enter repeatedly into those ruinous negotiations by which the United States jointly, and each of them in particular, together with all their lands, chattels, revenues and products, and also the imposts and taxes already laid and raised in the same, or in time to come to be laid and raised, are for the whole, mortgaged for the repayment of those loans by installments, and for the payments of the interest on them annually. These debts must be paid, bona fide, according to contract, or be further increased by procuring, if procurable, further loans, which ruinous as the measure is, must be continued unless the states empower Congress to raise money for the discharging of those debts. It will not be in the power of the United States, and I am sure it will not be in their inclination to rid themselves of those debts in the same base and ignominious manner in which a faction in one of them are endeavoring to get rid of theirs. To the same cause, a noncompliance with congressional requisitions are owing the repeated but necessary breaches of public faith in regard to the payment of the federal domestic debt. And hence, as relative to the joint consolidated debt, the inefficiency of the public finances and the bankrupt state of the federal treasury, which can never be remedied without empowering Congress to levy adequate duties and taxes. Without such a power, the accumulating debt will never be paid, but by a forcible collection which our foreign creditors know how and are able to apply, if unhappily it should be necessary. The several loans which by contract are to be paid by installments will, in case of the failure of any of the stipulated payments, become the whole of them, immediately payable, and any of the property of any of the states, whether public or private, can be most easily come at, will in that case be seized and applied for that purpose.
Okay, so at this point, are you getting the feeling like he's not just speaking in ambiguous terms? He's getting into detail here, where if you look at General Thomas, he basically, you know, speaks at a, you know, he doesn't want to focus on the details. Oh, it doesn't have a Bill of Rights, and, you know, they're going to be able to tax us, and this is bad. No details. It's kind of like when you deal with a person that, you know, uses an ad hominem attack. In other words, they can't beat the argument academically with any basis. So what they do is they attack the person or the people or what have you. And in in dealing with the Constitution, the Anti-Federalists could not overcome the facts. In other words, they couldn't stand there and dive into the details and basically say that because of these details, this is the problem. We can't accept this. Had they been able to articulate that, the Constitution would have been rejected. However, the Federalists were very clear that, yeah, hey, these are the powers, none other. Where do you see that they'll be able to do what you're saying, like getting rid of the militia? It says right here that they have the power to do this, and that's all they can do. They can't create a standing army. They have to use the militia. They have to federalize the militia. That becomes their army. Only while they're in their service to do what's necessary, and then they come back to the states. How is that a problem? It only becomes a problem when they don't do those things, and that's exactly what ended up happening. They started violating the essence, the spirit of the law, the letter of the law, and so forth. So anyway, let's go ahead with the next few paragraphs here. They're just kind of short.
This mode of reimbursement or reprisal will be upon the trade and navigation of the United States, and in proportion as ours of this state may be larger and more extensive than the trade and navigation of other states, we shall be the greatest sufferers. This ruin of our trade will involve in it not only the ruin of the mercantile part of the state and of the numerous body of mechanics dependent upon it, but will also essentially affect every other class of citizen and operate most extensively to the injury of the commonwealth. These are some of the consequences, certain and infallible, that will flow from the denial of that power to Congress. Shall we, then, we of this state, who are so much interested in this matter, deny them that power, a power so essential to our political happiness? But if we attend to our trade as it is at present, we shall find that the miserable state of it is owing to a like want of power in Congress. Other nations prohibit our vessels from entering their ports or lay heavy duties on our exports carried thither. And we have no retaliation or regulating power over their vessels and exports to prevent it. Hence, a decrease of our commerce and navigation and the duties and revenue arising from them. Hence, an insufficient demand for the produce of our lands and the consequent discouragement of agriculture. Hence, the inability to pay debts and particularly taxes, which by that decrease are enhanced. And hence, as the necessary result of all these, the immigration of our inhabitants. If it be asked, how are these evils and others that might be mentioned to be remedied? The answer is short, by giving Congress adequate and proper power, which such power be given by the proposed Constitution. It is left with the conventions from the several states, and with us who compose one of them, to determine. In determining on this question, every gentleman will doubtless consider the importance of cultivating a spirit of union among ourselves and with the several states. This spirit procured our emancipation from British tyranny, and the same spirit, by uniting us in the necessary means, must secure us to our dear-bought, blood-purchased liberty and independence, and deliver us from evils which, unless remedied, must end in national ruin. The means for effecting these purposes are within our reach, and the adoption of the proposed Constitution will give us the possession of them. Like all other human productions, it may be imperfect, but most of the imperfections imputed to it are ideal and unfounded, and the rest are of such a nature that they cannot be certainly known but by the operations of the Constitution. And if, in its operation, it should in any respect be essentially bad, it will be amended in one of the modes prescribed by it. I say, will be amended, because the Constitution is constructed on such principles that its bad effects, if any such should arise from it, will injure the members of Congress equally with their constituents, and therefore both of them must be equally induced to seek for and effectuate, if possible, the requisite amendments.
Okay, so here's something interesting, because we're going to actually see, and it only is in the Massachusetts debates, one of the things that they actually dig out is the fact that because our representatives are our representatives, they're us, that Congress, the House of Representatives, as well as the Senate, does not have the ability to create a law and immune themselves from it. It is to be applied to all the people. If the federal government creates a law that is applicable to the states, it's equally applicable to them. This mm-hmm. is one of the few ratification debates, actually the only one, if I remember correctly, and it comes up twice, and he's kind of played with it right there, where he says, if any should arise from it, will injure the members of Congress equally. See, he's kind of alluding to the fact that it's not just going to injure us, it'll injure them as well. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so keep going.
Okay. There have been many objections offered against the Constitution, and of these, the one most strongly urged has been the great power vested in Congress. On this subject, I beg leave to make a few general observations which ought to be attended to as being applicable to every branch of the power, of that power. It may therefore be observed that the investiture of such power, so far from being an objection, is a most cogent reason for accepting the Constitution. The power of Congress, both in the legislative and executive line, is the power of the people, collected through a certain medium to a focal point, at all times ready to be exerted for the general benefit according as circumstances or exigencies may require. If you diminish or annihilate it, you diminish or annihilate the means of your own safety and prosperity, which means, if they were to be measured like mathematical quantities, would be an exact proportion as the power is greater or less. But this is not the case, for power that does not reach or is inadequate to the object is worse than none. An exertion of such power would increase the evil it was intended to remove, and at the same time create a further evil, which might be a very great one, the expense of a fruitless exertion.
Okay, so I love it, the fact that these guys, the Federalists, they actually understood. And as a matter of fact, if I look at Mr. Bowdoin, I don't think Mr. Bowdoin was one that was representing Massachusetts. Now, we're actually running out of time. Mr. Gorham and Rufus King were the ones that signed it. And I'm trying to remember, Eldridge Gerry was one that was there, and he did not sign it. And so, anyway, we could get into that a little bit down the road, but bottom line, as we look at how the Federalists are getting into the nuts and bolts, and they're actually answering with real tangible, this is what this does, where a lot of times the anti-Federalists just, oh, this is terrible, it smells from here, but it's kind of like Trump. A lot of times, oh, it's marvelous, it's great, you know, it's wonderful, you're the best, right? I mean, there's no details. So I think when it comes to speaking to the public, we need to speak the details so that people know what's there. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us today. And
you're welcome.
We'll look forward to having you back tomorrow. And anyway, so we got to wrap it up, folks. We're going into break, or actually going to the end. And so with that, we're literally going to have to say goodbye. But we will be back tomorrow with the Massachusetts ratification debates. We're getting through these, and we're focused on giving you the content. I'm G.R. Mobley. We'll reclaim the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.